Nope. Seen it. Oh, nah.
Can't find something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream. It's Sky without the dish. Watch unmissable Sky exclusives like The Regime and Netflix too, all over super reliable Sky full fibre broadband. Get Sky Stream, Sky Broadband and Netflix for just €50 a month. Search Sky Stream. Availability subject location. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Stream and broadband sold separately. Further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds.
Seachtain. An Indo Ascaelige.
Time I mon iroachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp. Agus súligam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tarraing go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus gimine fanacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhin ann thar d'oraach sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Orsmond, chatting all things life lessons.
People often say to me when they come to my clinics, and now especially when they come to the hotel, they are like, you know, Ava, you are not the persona you the TV have, you know, made you to be. And actually, sometimes I'm thinking, my God, that's terribly sad that there is that negative. There's some people who absolutely don't like me because what they saw in television.
As ever, it's available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Six Nations is finally here, and what a game to kick things off. France hosting Ireland in Marseille on Friday night, and that promises to be an absolute cracker. So plenty to talk about on the latest episode of the Left Wing podcast. Will Slattery here with you. And in part two of the show, we will be joined by Jonathan Bradley to discuss all things Six Nations. But first, myself and Luke Fitzgerald were lucky enough earlier today to talk to Ronan O'Gara, who joined us in association with Guinness, title sponsor of the Six Nations. We discussed his coaching journey to date, Ireland versus France. And I started off by asking him if he could believe that it's been 15 years since himself and Luke embarked on that famous Grand Slam winning campaign.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like 15 years, that's for sure. But that's the beauty of our game. I think when you're finished, you obviously remember people you play with and you create great memories, but it also helps when it was, I suppose, ingrained with a special moment, winning a Grand Slam, being obviously the first Irish team to do it in whatever it was, 50 or 60 years. The team had grown to a stage where we probably felt that we'd be knocking on the door, but as you know, to be taken seriously as sports people, you need silverware, and they were magical moments, and they get better the more the years go by, for sure.
Yeah, Luke, from your own perspective, obviously over the 15 years you played with Ronan, now watching him as a coach, we've obviously discussed on this show plenty of times about La Rochelle, Leinster, and the role he's played in all that. Like, what have you made kind of watching Ronan's career develop since you finished your playing days together?
You're not going to force me to say something nice about him, Will, are you? That'd just be terrible. No, look, obviously very lucky to have overlapped with one of the greats, no doubt about it. Raj is always great with me. You know, I was obviously one of the young lads coming into the setup, helping these losers out because they couldn't win for ages without any of the young guns like myself, Heaslip and Kearney, etc. They needed us to get over the line. But no, look, obviously, you know, he's done brilliant things in his career. It speaks for itself. It's been so good to see. I just think the coaching career, I mean, look, to have gone, and I think he's done it the hard way, you know, to bring the family, to uproot them to France initially, and then obviously to New Zealand, and obviously back to France where he's doing such a brilliant job, and obviously breaking a lot of Leinster hearts, which I'm sure has been a nice little addition to winning the competition with La Rochelle yourself. But yeah, no, look, it's been great, and he's done a super job. We're all very excited to see, you know, how things progress from going forward. Does he end up in that in the hot seat after Andy Farrell, or what happens? But yeah, it's been great to watch, and he was a great teammate. So great to have him on, Raj. Great to have you.
Yeah, it is great to talk with people you enjoy playing with. Yeah, fantastic.
you know, lots of Six Nations stuff I'd love to ask you about. But one thing, Luke touched on the coaching element there that I've been intrigued to know just from watching you operate. Like, is it difficult or how difficult is it to operate in your second language? Obviously, you've been living in France for a long time with La Rochelle, prior to that with Racing. But you have to communicate with, I know there's a lot of international players there, but like a huge number of French players, and get the message across to a degree that ultimately you've been able to win back-to-back European Cups and almost win a top 14. Like, what's that like?
It's a good question. It's a question I'm not asked enough about, you know, because you have to think in English and translate live, you know, because in our game, you have an idea of what you want to say. But then when you get into autopilot and you get into a discussion or a debate, because a lot of people understand that you're in our game, you're judged not by what you say, really. But it helps if you say good things, but also just by your presence and just standing there. So you have to think in English, translate into French and get your message across. And then players want to get better as well. So they may not mean any harm, but they'll come back at you and they come back hard at you and they want an answer to something. And job you go into in an English-speaking environment after this will be so much easier, because out of respect for, well, the guys here, we do everything in French, even though it's whatever, 50-50, but there's very little English spoken among, certainly in meetings. So, when the foreigners in the dressing room chat among themselves, they chat obviously in English, but I have no idea what's going on in the changing room, because that's for player space. But in terms of when you're presenting, everything is in French. So, and sometimes one little thing may get the word wrong, but it's very important that there is never a breakdown in messaging because of the language barrier. And we double and triple stress that, because there's no reason why we cannot be understood, because rugby is quite simple. We can make it complicated at times, but messaging has to be on point, and it eliminates a lot of the bullshit that's involved in the game as well.
Well, I think they understood, say, opportune, effing enorme. That obviously went viral from a few months
ago. Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's important. You can laugh at yourself because, I suppose the context of that, and the context is important. This is the Monday after a European, or a Tuesday maybe, after European Cup final. So there's a deal done with Canal over here that when you're in the phase finals, that you get followed by, you have constant camera on you because they want more footage. So, if I'm to look every time I go into the team meeting room, is there a camera on me or not? It doesn't really interest me. If you're not, Luke would be aware of that too. When you're in that environment as a player for your country or your province or a good club in France, the camera just becomes part of your daily apparatus, So, I wasn't aware that it was on. So we thought we were better than we were. We had gone to Dublin and won a brilliant final. But then everyone was given their opinion. Well, I'd like it to be Bordeaux, or I'd like it to be Lyon that wins the quarterfinal. And I'm there to them, lads, I don't care who it is, and I hope you don't care either. But never had they spent so much time talking about who we were going to play in the semi-final of the top 14. If they gave as much interest to their own game and watched training, I would have been happier with them than them kind of playing out, well, yeah, I'd be better if it was this or that. And I was like, hold on a second, we're in the semi-final. Let's not worry about who the opposition is. Let's try and just get our... One of the fundamental points for me, I find it very, very difficult to give time to look at the opposition because there's so many weaknesses in our own game.
Hmm. Well, yeah.
Can I ask you, Raj, a quick one? Like, any doubts? I mean, you always struck me, and probably, you have to outwardly, I suppose, put out that front because you're the leader of the team in that pivotal role at 10. Any kind of doubts from time to time in the coaching and how do you deal with those things? Because it must be challenging trying to put something on, put a plan down and then watching people try to execute it. But, when you're not doing it yourself, it can often be a big challenge. They always say that about ex-players kind of going into coaching and roles and things like that.
Yeah, and you make a good point. For me, there's no rollover, There's the player and then there's the coach. Mm. I think there's obviously bits of the player that you bring with you, and there's bits of the player that you don't at all bring. There are two different kind of careers and two, you know, I mean, completely different skill sets really involved in it. And as you say, it's been a lonely road and an isolated road, being an assistant coach and going where you needed to go to find out so much about you. Because if you don't understand what you stand for and who you are, it's very hard to portray that or push that on people about, you know what I mean, values and standards and getting the best out of yourself and the importance of consistency of behavior. So, you know, it's probably over 10 years coaching now, Luke, and there's days where most definitely you're being honest, you're kind of go, I'm not made for this. This isn't for me. This is too difficult, you know, but that's quite normal. It was only, I think, going to the, in the second year in the Crusaders as an assistant, that I could finally feel completion of the jigsaw. There was kind of that kind of self-contentment that came together where, you know what I mean, because you don't have a clue really about wingers play. I mean, even though you play 10, you know, you unless you play that position, you know it inside out and you can really, really give an opinion. Otherwise, you're giving a kind of a broad view on the role of 11, 14, 15, 12, 13. You know, when I'm any action on the right-hand side, line out or scrum, obviously there's always direct communication, 10, 14, 10, 12, 10 to 13 is easy. You miss out maybe 15 or 11. But like, that's the backs point. You imagine then, like, the amount of detail that's involved in numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. You have a fair idea of what a 6, 7, and 8 can do, but 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, you have no idea what goes on in the front five. You know, it's a different world for us, but it's why it's important that you kind of get someone you trust. And that's been brilliant having Donica here, because we see the game so differently. I see the game, I would say, any way I like. And I think that's why it works, because he gives me the mindset of a front five and what they kind of look for. And I'm like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah. And I'm going, oh, okay. Because there's no possible way in my first, I suppose, 20 estimations that I'd be thinking that's what's in their head, you know. And it's great to have that kind of pre-knowledge before you assemble a plan. But for me, I get very, and it's not all every week because you can't do it, but you get very excited by the opportunity to break down a team by attacking space as opposed to running over teams. People go, well, yeah, it's easy for him because he will Skelton, Winnie, Antonio. But the message always is to go where the space is. But sometimes we have people who are blinker, but unless you show them what scanning looks like, and there's some great football videos around Messi and Lampard and people like that, just their capacity to scan before they get the ball. I think you try and drive that in rugby, because imagine if you had a 14 or 11 where you're available every time to first option cross kick Luke, second option you're able to link with your 15. But if you just are only good at the one role, we can only be 50% as good, you know, because you're never going to pass it by hand 10 to a winger, but you could easily pass it by foot because you have the right to forward pass with your foot, but not with your hand, you know. So there's a lot of imagination involved and it becomes exciting. But I think what's good here when you're given the reins is that players want to have fun and they want to have excitement and they want to be able to express themselves. And I think that's what we've got right, because you also have to acknowledge that winning the European Cup back to back is very, very special, and it takes a special team to do that. And that's not pumping up my tyres or anyone's tyres, but like, there's huge, huge satisfaction in that. That will,
that's what you're talking about, Rog. I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, it's a very but even like, you, whatever it is for you 10 years later, isn't it?
I know, listen, it's a really tough thing to back it up, you know. And yeah, I think to keep the level that high, and as you said, the interest and the excitement as well, you know, must be a real challenge for a coach, you know. And you do think, just thinking of the great coaches that, you know, we had, I always think they were great at that, you know, keeping the interest levels high, keeping on top of what's current in the game and making players excited. I think that's the key thing, keeping the level's high. And
yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it's probably a very un-Irish like thing to do. You know, in 06, we won it. 07 didn't get out of our group. And then on the reaction, you know, but why does it have to be a reaction? Why can't you have consistent excellency? And that's what Leinster did over that period. But that's 11 years ago.
Ronan, is it more difficult to be a top class player or a top class coach? Like, you've obviously won two Champions Cups as a player, you've won two as a coach. Is it more difficult to be the driving force at out half to winning two Champions Cups, or being a head coach kind of overseeing?
None of it is difficult. It's all such a pleasure, you know. I think that's the big thing. Everyone thinks that I'm suffering. It's the opposite, you know. You surround yourself with brilliant people when you're playing, and you have, if you're lucky enough, the more successful you are, you have huge failure. But that's part of the course, and that's part of sport. And it's the same when you're coaching, but it's so much more powerful being a coach, because it's 70 pieces of the jigsaw that have come together. When you're the player, you're that segment of the jigsaw. But when it comes together, the global picture, it's hugely, hugely rewarding. And it just, because it's very rare you win all the time, you know? So you have to be very grateful for what's happening, but also know that, is this sustainable? No, but if I'm constantly knocking on the door with a team, that for me is consistent excellency, and that's what stimulates me.
Just to turn to the Six Nations before we finish up with you, obviously France-Ireland on Friday night, absolutely massive clash to kick things off. Like, what can we expect from France? Obviously, they had massive disappointment at the World Cup. No DuPont. There's a couple of injuries. You're obviously very plugged into French rugby. You know, are they still the team to beat, do you think, the Six Nations?
Well, they're the team to beat in the first game, that's for sure, because I think they will be possessed going to Marseille. I think it's a lovely new, add-on for the Six Nations. Yeah, there was warm-up games moved around the country. And there's huge buy-in and interest in French rugby at the minute. They're, you know, you were all over for the World Cup, but it left a taste for more. And now the fact that it's in the Velodrome, it's a sporting city with huge tradition and history, and the fans will be very, very passionate. You'll have a fantastic surface, a fast game in good conditions, which is probably not what we expect for the first game of Six Nations in February, but in Marseille you'll get that. So from a kind of a catch pass or conditions point of view, it'll favour skills. So usually there's nothing to negate kind of people's skills or no levelers in this game. It'll be the capacity to play from wherever. And I think what's happened, I suppose, from the World Cup is that France were, for me, infatuated by depossession rugby. I don't think that's them at their best. I think they got so much out of the data. DuPont can probably kick the ball 20 metres longer than a lot of guys, even though Luku has a great kick in him as well, to be fair. But I think the learnings are, I'm only speculating here, but I think France would play in the Six Nations because sometimes winning isn't enough for the French public. They're crazy in the fact that they have to win with style, and they have to, you know what I mean, show the ooh la la and play, and Penaud needs to score three tries, and they need to kind of show off their ability. But for me, it's a fascinating game between a team with a lot of X factor against a highly oiled, cohesive, fit, structured game plan with a big emphasis on an attack shape in Ireland.
Yeah.
Talking about that, the key question, Rog, and you're no better man in terms of giving a view on this one, that 10 role and the impact of, like, no Johnny Sexton in there, it looks like Crowley is the obvious candidate there, very much the obvious candidate to take over that 10 role at this juncture. What do you make of him, and do you think he can steer the ship in Johnny's absence?
I think what's happened in Johnny's absence is there's a necessity for two, because it's probably too big an ask for one guy to fill that role. You know what I mean? I think where I see it going might be a 50-30 with a Crowley Frawley excites me a lot, or a 60-20, or if Jack is done the business 70, but like 70 minutes of test level is like 90 minutes of Champions Cup, you know. It's going to, the preparation will take a lot out of them mentally, and then test games are won for the, in the last 10 minutes. Frawley has been exceptionally good anytime we've seen him, but I suppose the big question everyone is asking is if he wants to play 10 for Ireland, he has to play 10 for his club. So he needs to make a move in that regard. But in the short term, I think it makes for a great combo. Yeah, it'll be Crowley's starting role. And if he does the business, he'll keep it and keep it and keep it. But also, I think the game is changing where you need impact, no matter how good the starter is, to finish the game or to get him over the line. And that's not a slight on Crowley whatsoever. For me, it's a kind of, you're trying to combine the best of the both of them to get the better of, for example, a Jalibert Ramos, you know? Imagine, like, Ramos is such a weapon for France. They can move him from 15 to 10. And I think, you know, he's probably the best goal kicker in the world at this stage.
And one last question, Ronan, before we let you go, and really appreciate you joining us. You know, ultimately, who do you think will win on Friday night?
I think it'll be one score game. I think Ireland will fancy probably disturbing France up front. I think France have a few advantage in probably X factor backs and Dante and Pino. For me, the key is the game management of 9-10 against the Bordeaux duo.
So France or Ireland?
I would say, I think France will be difficult at home. I would be far more surprised by Ireland beating France than by France beating Ireland, because home advantage is absolutely huge. I would think it would be an unbelievably good night's work for Ireland if they were to win. It would be up there with a one of their greatest victories, because I think people underestimate how intimidating the venue is. And for Ireland players, it'll be a special night for them, in the fact that it'll be one of these kind of games where if they do the business, it'll be kind of something ticked off their bucket list, because it's the ground that really, I think, hits you the minute you go in there.
Great stuff, Ronan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, plenty of insight from Ronan O'Gara there. And now I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Jonathan Bradley. Jonathan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Will. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Plenty to get into ahead of Friday night. And first, I want to throw some statistics at you and get your opinion on it, because I'm kind of approaching the Six Nations, and I'm not entirely sure why, with a small degree of trepidation. And I think it's the prospect of a World Cup hangover, because I went back and I looked at Ireland's record in Six Nations post-World Cups, and it doesn't make for pleasant reading. There's been six Six Nations tournaments after a World Cup. Ireland have never won any of them. They've only come second once out of six attempts. And if you contrast that with the kind of even numbered years that take place, you know, in the middle of a World Cup cycle, Ireland, I think, have won two Six Nations and come second three times out of six appearances. So the history books will tell us that we could be in for a tough couple of weeks. Am I overreading these statistics, or do you think there's something to that, that Ireland have traditionally been quite poor in the Six Nations after a World Cup?
Well, I think there's definitely something to it. And normally they're not going into it having lost their most important player in the break between the World Cup and the Six Nations either. So, I mean, if you look at it that way, theoretically, it could be even worse. I don't think that it will be. But whenever you're talking about trepidation, for me, the big trepidation comes from the fact that this Ireland team is such an unknown now, in the sense that even if you're only taking one player out of it, and I know Mac Hansen's obviously injured as well, but you're only taking one player out of it, but it is the most important player to the attack. So I think it's only natural that people are going to be, if not nervous, there's going to be a sense of, for the first time in quite a while, we don't know exactly what we're going to get from what has been one of the most consistent sides in international rugby over the last 2 years.
How are you approaching things? Like, what's let's do a vibes check. You know, it's in, because for some reason, I don't know what it is. Obviously, to be fair, the last game Ireland played was a devastating World Cup quarterfinal defeat, similar to France, to be fair. But I don't know, there's something about this tournament that I'm just a little uneasy about. I just don't quite know what to expect from Ireland. Jonathan touched on a few things there, but how are you feeling about the team going into Friday?
Fear of the unknown, I think, is what you have, Will. And yeah, look, I think, look, it's a small enough, like, I mean, six is hardly a big sample to really say, well, look, there's statistically speaking that we've got something that we can really hang our hat on. I would say Ireland, generally speaking, you know, if you just think about it broadly, we generally have a smaller player pool. Generally, after World Cup, lots of people will try, you know, will try and make it to that point and call it quits in their career. So generally, there's turnover. So you think, you know, maybe our player pool is a little bit smaller, and perhaps that's always been a bit more challenging for us to you know, turn over a squad. But I don't see that with this team. I think there's plenty of really good pieces around that key 10 role, which we assume is going to be obviously Jack Crowley. And, you know, I like him. I think he's a big game player. I think the challenge for him, just from what I've seen from him, is that, you know, realising playing international rugby in that position is very much about everyone else and not about you. I see him trying a few chips and a few things like that with Munster at different periods, you know, kind of speculative stuff for himself. And that could kind of work at club rugby. That won't work at international level, I don't think. And for him, it's realising that, you know, and it'll take time. It will take time. You know, you heard Rog saying that as well. You know, you have to be patient. You have to have time in the pocket there, I think. And as well, you know, he mightn't get the 80 minutes that he wants. I think the game has probably moved on even from O'Gara's era and Sexton's era, you know, or particularly earlier on. So he mightn't be getting 80 minutes every week. He might be sharing that load. That was an interesting point I thought Ronan made. But I think you have to bring in the other players. It's all about bringing in the other players and the opportunities for yourself, because he does have a good running game, will kind of present themselves. And he has to, you know, I think a player of his quality has to realise that he will see those obvious ones when the time comes. He doesn't have to force anything there. He seems like a smart guy, has very switched on. Really like what I see so far. And if it's Frawley in, you know, coming in for 20 minutes or so of each game, or 30 minutes or so, you know, he looks like a guy, I think, who has the same kind of issues with Leinster. You know, he hasn't had as much game time now as Crowley, but, you know, he saw him kind of trying a few things, you know, maybe not delivering on the basics, which I think is really, really important at international rugby for Leinster when he came in, say for that Sale game. There's a few kind of sloppy pieces. So, you know, kick well, bring the team into the game, the good players around you. Don't overcomplicate things and deliver on the game plan. And that's a real surefire way of settling yourself into that position, I think. But that's really hard to do under the scrutiny and the pressure that comes with playing 10 in an international rugby team. So I'm excited about it. I think it's a real opportunity for some young guys who I think are really good rugby players to showcase their talents. I'm excited also about who comes into not just the playing side that Johnny, the void that Johnny has left, but also the leadership role. I think O'Mahony is the obvious candidate, but I think we'll be looking to see longer term who else pokes their head up above the parapet to say, yeah, I think I'd be well suited to that role, because obviously Pete's age means that, you know, is he going to get us to the next World Cup? So we're just going to be looking for those two things. And I do feel Andy Farrell has been really good and consistent on picking his best team each time. He doesn't look, I don't think, too far in front. He picks the best team available to be competitive, and I think he'll do that this week, and I expect the team to be competitive in what is a very, very tough place to go. So it's a great one. It's a mouth-watering one to open the tournament with, I think.
Oh yeah, you couldn't ask for a bigger game to kick things off. Jonathan, like, are Ireland still good enough to win the Six Nations without Johnny Sexton? You know, not to maybe point at Jack Crowley and say, oh, can they win it with Jack Crowley? He has achieved a lot in his club career, even a short one today, but losing a player of that calibre, is this team still good enough to win the Six Nations, do you think?
I think that it is. I think you also have to add in the context that, for me, Ireland have lost their best player, but, you know, France have lost their best player as well. They've also lost the 10 that plays alongside him. So there's no Antoine Dupont, there's no Roman Entomac, but a few other injuries as well. Ireland, I think, are absolutely good enough to do it, but it's, for me, it's just, it's such a question mark that we just haven't had. You know, we're only going back 3.5 months to Johnny Sexton being viewed as so important to Ireland that he played 80 minutes of a quarterfinal. 4.5 months ago, we were all so worried about how important Johnny Sexton was to this Ireland team that we were genuinely having discussions about whether him missing warm-up games in the build-up to playing Romania, was something that we should be concerned about. Like, that's how important Johnny Sexton was to this team as recently as 4 months ago. So it's more just the fact that we don't know. Like, is Jack Crowley good enough for Ireland to win the Six Nations? Personally, I think that he is. I think for what Luke said there about the sort of big game temperament that he's shown leading Munster to the ERC title last year, I think that really stands to him. But it is a big step up. And we've seen this time and time again that it's a big adjustment, and how long that adjustment takes a player is what is the unknown. So yes, I think they're good enough, but so much of it is going to come down to how many games in the saddle it takes Jack Crowley to be that guy. And like, I know people are going to be listening and thinking, oh, you know, we're not talking about somebody that has no caps. But if we're thinking about it, you know, he's had three starts, I believe. Two of them were in warm-up games, the other one being against Australia back in November. So yes, he's got caps, and yes, he's been in the camp. He's been around the players. He's, you know, in the media interviews that he's given, he's talking about how much he's learned from just being in and around Sexton. But nobody knows how quickly he is going to be an international quality starting 10. Like, nobody knows how long that's going to take, assuming that he gets there. So until we see it, like, it's really, it's all just speculation.
Yeah, and obviously, like, the on-pitch, you touched on it, Luke, the on-pitch influence of Johnny Sexton is obviously obvious to the eye when you're watching it, but, and you'll know well, like, the influence he exerted off the pitch in terms of setting standards. Like, a number of the squad are on the record saying how standards drop when he's not around. Like, that's a slightly alarming prospect. This is the first time, it's been 15 years since he hasn't been in the squad. That Grand Slam I referred to, you know, yourself and Rog won, that was the last time Johnny Sexton wasn't involved in an Ireland Six Nations squad, which is mad to think about. Like, how big a concern would that be, that he's no longer there to set the standards, that even though Jack Crowley could come in and play great rugby, but if all the other players take a 2% or a 1% dip because Johnny isn't there to keep them going, then the team surely cumulatively takes a step backwards.
Yeah, look, it was an interesting comment at the time. We've obviously harped on about it quite a bit because I was obviously astonished by that. You know, I would have thought that everyone has their own standards and that's it. But look, I think they'll have moved on from that comment. I think they were a little bit younger at that stage too. You know, you think, I think it was, might have been James Ryan might have mentioned,
yeah,
that.
James Lowe said similar as well.
Yeah, so look, I think they'll all have to grow up and realise that they've got their own careers and you know, things move on from Johnny. Like, in a way, this could be very... it could be very freeing for this team that they don't have this concentration of risk in one, you know, that key man risk that you always worry about, like, geez, what happens if it all, they don't really have that now, you know what I mean? So that could be a bit liberating for them. So there is an upside to this thing too. Look, what I would say is, you know, like a Tom Brady, you know, like a kind of a senior quarterback who has just seen so much and has been in the situations and has delivered in the situations, you of course are going to lose out in that respect. And that's a big challenge. But like, these other players will bring different things to the game, I think, than Johnny. So like, they'll be a little bit more robust. You know, they're younger guys that should be able to go, if you need them to go 80 minutes. Now, they may not, but if you need them to go 80 minutes, these guys should be more durable and able to do that just by virtue of being younger. I think if it's Frawley and if it's Crowley, which we think it probably is, they both have probably a better running game than Johnny. Like, they're probably slightly better athletes, I think. Not from when he was in his pomp, and they're probably smaller guys, but they're both excellent tacklers too. So that's a thing that you get with them as well. You wouldn't be as worried about them having to take, you know, Aldred or one of these guys for 80 minutes. You think they're probably able for five or six of those tackles. You know, their bodies are just not as worn down. So we do get some other things with them, Will. Now, what you do miss with Johnny Sexton, and you've heard me say this about him, and key, like, guys like Dricko talking about it too, you know, his short kicking game, like his crossfield kicking game, outstanding. He really has seen those situations a lot and really reads them well. I think Crowley looks like he can do it. You saw that one against Toulon. That was excellent, that little chip for Zeebo. So you miss a bit of that there. You also miss the ball handling ability. That is what really sets Johnny Sexton, in my opinion, like head and shoulders above nearly any fly half that I've ever come across. And I promise you I don't say that lightly. I think how quickly he can see a situation and deliver a pinpoint pass at pace or slowly or, you know, a disguise one where he's, you know, you see Finn Russell doing it a little bit, but Johnny Sexton was the best at that. Like a disguise one where he's looking somewhere else and throws it. Those things are really, really hard to deliver. Now, I don't think the guys need to try and do the same thing there, because I think that was a real special gift that he had to be able to do that particular ball handling ability, that passing ability. But you don't have to get there, but you need to try and get close enough to that. That's really, really difficult to do. So can they bridge the gap there? That's where the team will really lose out in those two big areas. We can't expect them to have seen the amount of scenarios, but we can't expect them to be really accurate with their passing, bring in other players, be thinking that way, be thinking how Johnny might be thinking in terms of, you know, I always felt like Johnny was brilliant at directing the team around. His first thing was not, where's the break for me? His first thing is, okay, what's the next one? Okay, well, look, what's that picture showing me? Where should I be going to? They're all things that I think these guys could deliver on, not to the same standard, but close. And I think if they do that, the team will go well. I think there's lots of guys who are better players now. They're better players than John, like over the last 3 or 4 years. You think of your Sheehan's, you think of Kelleher's coming back into the mix now. You think of Ryan. I think McCarthy is a great addition to this team. I think you look at that back row. Doris is a bit of a leader now. O'Mahony, we know what we get with him, but Baird is there. You know, you've got Ty Byrne possibly there or in the row. Like, there's loads of brilliant players around, you know, around whoever that 10 role is going to be. Bundy Aki is coming off an unbelievable World Cup. So I think there's plenty of tools for the 10 if they're in the right mindset, if they're cool, if they're calm, which is going to be very challenging for this team to go and maybe be a better team without him. I think that's a big statement to make, maybe not straight away, but let's not, I wouldn't rule that out at this point. This team could be better because of the other guys being better, not just about Johnny. You know, I think obviously we're going to lose something there, but look, I'm positive. I'm positive about it. You're not so positive.
I thought the Patriots would be better at Tom Brady as well. We've seen it.
I'm not saying it's going to happen straight away, Will. But look, I actually am positive about it. I think there's loads to be positive about this Irish team. I think, you know, the challenge for them now is that this is a really difficult starting fixture. And to coincide with that, is there any other team in the competition that could beat France if they lose on Friday night? And I don't think there is. You know, traditionally in this one, if you got to a bonus point, you say, well, maybe England could pick them off.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. So this is a huge, huge match to open the tournament. And there's a lot of pressure that comes alongside it if they want to go ahead and win the competition.
Yeah, from an Irish perspective, you'd almost prefer if the fixtures, the first two were flipped around. Maybe if you started with Italy, get Crowley kind of bedded in and then go to France the second weekend. Like, you couldn't ask for a tougher way to start the tournament. Jonathan, in terms of like, I don't know, things in the World Cup that you'd like to see improved on or changes in the World Cup. The last time we saw Ireland play, the line-out is obviously the big one, you know, that came under immense pressure in various instances, South Africa in particular, but the All Blacks picked off a couple as well. You know, that as one, is there anything else kind of that vein that you think, okay, Ireland need to improve there and then maybe they can really have a crack at winning this tournament?
Yeah, well, I mean, the scrum as well, you know, yeah. It was both set pieces, really. If you go back to the last time that we saw Ireland, you know, it was Andrew Porter going back and forth with Wayne Barnes at the scrum, 3 penalties. And in the context of that game, those 3 penalties were huge. Like, we've all seen Andrew Porter's comments about what he thought in the moment. And we heard what Andy Farrell thought about it afterwards. But that's an area where, rightly or wrongly, the perception is that Ireland are illegal in their scrum. So the perception is more important than the reality almost when it comes to refereeing interpretation. So we need to see a step forward there. I think the line out that you mentioned is going to be a massive concern until they show that they fixed it, basically, because at the World Cup, they didn't really show an ability to get that right against anyone. It didn't really matter who they were playing. They weren't adapting to it. And you think about somebody this weekend, you know, Cameron Wokey, if he plays, there's some speculation that he might not actually play, which seems mad to me that you could have a deep enough squad to not play him. But he's one of the best jumpers on opposition ball in the world that you're going to be up against on Friday. So it's a real acid test early on of the things that, you know, we're looking to improve upon from the World Cup before you even really get into that, how the attack looks without Sexton thing as well.
Anything jumping to your mind? Like, obviously, as Jonathan touched on, I missed out in the scrum. That was a major kind of issue with the World Cup, as was the line-out. But yeah, anything else kind of on top of your mind in terms of things you'd like to see tweaked, improved, changed?
I would add as well, just on the line-out. So I think they threw out some stats about the wins they had in the line-out. But I feel like a lot of that ball wasn't great ball. It was all at 2, wasn't it? Like, so I thought that was kind of masking maybe the larger issues they had. So I would add that little bit on, because Jonathan's completely right on those two issues that we would love to, and I think they take the team on to being really, really hard to beat. Like, I you know, if Ireland get those 2 set piece, you know, issues right, they'll be very, very difficult for anyone to beat, even France, you know. And that's probably an obvious statement because we know how strong France are in both facets. But I'd like to see them. The growth for me is not can they win the ball there, but can they win it in good places? They looked a little bit clunky to me for someone who's, look, I'm not an expert in the area, but I know what good ball looks like there. And it didn't feel like, while we got the ball, it looked like a lot of it was very conservative at two, which teams would like. It's easier to defend you there. So I'd like to see maybe a little bit of growth in that area. And I think I wouldn't touch the attack, but I'd like us to be a bit stingier defensively. I always talk about this, Will. I thought we were a little bit loose.
Even if you think about the All Blacks, and
we definitely, one of them was very, very soft. The one off the tail of the line out where Moonga goes through. I mean, that's pretty inexcusable to me to be caught in the seams. You know, when I say about the seam, I mean the area between the set piece and where your back line is lining up. To be caught in that little corridor there is kind of a schoolboy error, particularly against a Joe Schmidt team. Like every one of those players, there's lots of senior Leinster players who would know Joe inside out and know that that's where you're going to be attacking. It's the most vulnerable spot because a forward has to connect with a back there. If you can tie him in for an extra second or get him caught taking a slightly wrong line, it's really exposed. So that was kind of a schoolboy error to me, and it cost them dearly because they were a better team than that New Zealand team and still should have won the game, by the way, because, you know, if Kelleher gets that driving wall over, like we're having a very different conversation about this Irish team. So I wouldn't touch the attack too much. Thought they were excellent there. Thought the rucking accuracy maybe could have slightly been improved against New Zealand, but I actually thought New Zealand did an excellent job there. But that would be the thing for me. Can they get the set pieces right? And the defence, can it be just a little bit, it just takes to be a little bit stingy, Will. It's that one extra try, I think, in the key matches against the big teams. If they can stop that, and I always feel like Leinster as well in the big matches have the same issue. If they can stop that one extra try, I think there's no team that can live with them.
Well, the defence will be even more stressed the weekend. You know, listening to Ronan earlier, he was saying he expects France to play even more than they have, you know, under Galtier today, where like they have kind of married their French flair with their fairly pragmatic kicking game, but he thinks after the World Cup they might play a little more rugby. So, you know, Damien Penno, you know, Louis Billy Bray, Jalabert, all these guys, like
they're on fire at the moment,
yeah,
as well,
they
aren't
really
they?
Are, like,
yeah.
So that'll be a major test for the Irish.
It will, but it also presents an opportunity. Like international rugby, you know, French flair, you know, has gotten them in trouble as well, you know, as many times as as we've seen some magical displays. You think of the New Zealand wins at the World Cups in the quarterfinals, where you have these moments of magic. But there's been plenty of times where, you know, against a stingy English defence, you know, think of those Wilkinson teams, you know those.
I just remembered Michalak throwing the ball to Cameron Jowd. I know it wasn't against Ireland. Remember that one when he got snagged?
I remember it. So they are liable to do those things. So what does that mean? That means that, if they are going to be a bit more expansive, are you ready for that? Have you done the homework? Do you know who the danger men are? Do you know what foot to step off? Have you gone into that level of detail on the defence? Because I feel like this Ireland team goes into that level of detail in attack, but have they done that in defence? Are they prepared for the physical battle? Because that's really what allows the French teams to go ahead and be effective there. Because, you know, if they are going to throw it around, they might still throw it around if they're going backwards and if their pack isn't getting any go for it. And that's a very different proposition for a defence. And that presents those opportunities that you've seen Wales in the past, at key matches in the Six Nations, take advantage. Think of the George North intercepts, all those kind of things. That's the opportunities that those things throw up. So if you're defending well, if you're meeting them physically at the gain line, and possibly driving them back, and you're defensively on the money, that's what you want. You want them to think, oh, let's throw it around. Let's try the chip kick here, in from close to our own line. Let's try the long pass in our 22. Ireland, I think, are a good enough team to be able to stifle them and to keep them at bay. So I don't think there's any need to fear that, and it should present an opportunity if they're on their game.
Yeah, Jonathan, just to turn it around and look at it from a French perspective, you know, they also had a devastating quarterfinal defeat at home as well. I'd imagine there's a lot of pressure on them on Friday as well. You know, there's no DuPont. As you touched on there, there's kind of murmurings of Fabien Galthié making some very big selection calls, maybe not having Cameron Waukee in the team, going with two big beefy second rows, and maybe putting Mafena on the wing and not even starting Billy Bray, who's been unreal for Bordeaux. So there's a lot of kind of, I don't know if you say question marks, but it's not just like, oh, Ireland coming in under pressure after the World Cup and to the away game. Like, France need to kind of go out and deliver, because if they don't, losing a home game to start the tournament, Fabien Galthié will be under huge pressure.
Not to mention the fact that as badly as the World Cup exit went down in Ireland, like, France's World Cup hangover is so much worse than ours here, because it was on home soil. It was a once-in-a-generation thing. They really thought that they were going to have this sort of coronation in the Stade de France. Like, as much as there was disappointment here, like, it's got to have been so much worse in France, given that they were at home. And, you know, you mentioned the pressure. You're reading things where it's, you're sort of hearing talk about how intense the environment is under Galtier, how long players can respond to that sort of thing. So it's not going to take a particularly bad Six Nations for there to be an awful lot of questions asked about France. I think you're 100% right on that. The style is going to be really interesting. You mentioned, are they going to free it up? It almost seems natural that they would, because, you know, they don't have the best kicking scrum half in the world anymore. Luku, I think, is a good player, but he's not Antoine Dupont. It's a different type of game. And if they do go with that back line with four Bordeaux players in it, which we think that they will do, do they lean into that more Bordeaux style, which is a little bit more, I suppose, a little bit more off the cuff than we've seen France play, as attractive a brand of rugby as they do play? But there'll be question marks then about how well suited that is to international rugby as opposed to top end club rugby. So I think for me, France are probably the team that you're almost keenest to see, because as good as they've been, this is probably, we've got more questions about them than I think that we've had at any stage really in the last sort of 3 years.
Yeah, and you mentioned kind of the hangover and how much worse it is. It's probably cost them DuPont, I'd imagine. Like, if they win the World Cup, I doubt DuPont leaves and goes to sevens. It feels like it's almost like a makeup thing for not winning the World Cup, trying to go and win a medal on home soil. Because, I watched Toulouse Rossing on Sunday night. He's playing some great stuff at the moment. He seems to be in the form of his life.
So when is he not playing? Is there ever a period where he's not playing scintillating rugby?
He's even more scintillated than usual, if that's even possible. Because, like you can't downplay how massive a loss that is. Like, you know, to be fair, Luku's has looked really good this season for Bordeaux. A lot of people have seen him play, but that's still a major loss. Like,
yeah, it is. Look, the one thing I would say is, though, like, it does become a little bit about DuPont when he's playing there. Now, he's so good, it's not really
a
problem.
Bit of a messy when he
no,
plays
it's not
well,
really a problem, but they have they have some serious weapons, you know. And if you have a player who's maybe facilitating more for other players, you know, and is thinking more about, you know, his the options that are around him. Further to that kind of conversation I was having with myself about the Ireland fly half situation and playing international rugby, sometimes it can be a good thing that you have a pure kind of a facilitator there. And we talked about Rog. I'm not as familiar with his kicking game. Rog says he has a very strong kicking game as well, not as good as DuPont's. But look, it'll be interesting to see how they go. And, you know, Jalabert is he's seriously exciting. If they play Ramos there, he's obviously very exciting there too. I don't think that's likely. But look, I think the one thing about playing a very expansive game is if they do pick a very big pack, you know, how long can they keep that going for? And does that play into Ireland's hands? You think of how mobile this Irish team is and how dangerous this Irish team are when they have, you know, possession for long periods. They can break teams down. They can be very accurate. You think of the likes of Keenan and these guys. Now, they are missing Hansen, but there's still lots of quality in this Irish team that I think, if the game is played at a high pace and it's open for long periods of time, if they're on defensively, I don't have a doubt that this Irish team can pick the French team apart, from an attack perspective. I really believe that. I just think there's so much quality there. There's guys playing well. They can play a tough, they can play a robust, you know, up and down game with that key there, with probably Henshaw maybe on the bench. We don't know who's on the bench, but someone like a Henshaw there, they can be pretty robust there as well. But they also have the keys to unlock you, you know, with the Ringrose, with a Keenan, with a Lowe, with all these kind of tools that they have. There's plenty in this Irish team, and plenty in this Irish pack, by the way, to open up spaces and to take advantage of those spaces if it's a fast game. So I'm not sure that they want to be doing that, even if it's what the crowd want. I'm not sure it really plays into what I would feel like are the unique parts of this French team, which is the sheer size of that pack and, you know, how much they'll be able to go at this Irish team and maybe have a little bit of momentum from that World Cup where Ireland's set pieces aren't looking so hot. And I think it's pretty much to the forefront of lots of people's minds when you think of Ireland and the troubles that they had there. But we know that this French team didn't have those issues and are very, very strong there. And you look at La Rochelle and the issues that they've caused Leinster. My sense is that it would be a mistake for them to lean into this Bordeaux kind of style rugby. I think those opportunities will present themselves if the pack is able to do what it should be able to do to this Irish pack based on the previous performances where they've done well against them at home, you know, where they've been able to dominate Leinster, Ireland in the tight exchanges, and they've been able to dominate them at set piece. So I would, if I was Galtier, that's where I would lean to. I feel like that's the obvious advantage they have over this team.
That was the recipe, I think, in 2022 when they won in the Stade de France. They, like, you know, they got a lot of scrum penalties, but they still had some lovely tries. I remember DuPont and Entomac combining well, them scoring another nice try in the second half. So that's definitely... And the team that they're allegedly are going to be picking seems to lend itself to kind of that style rather than going much more attack-minded. Like, if they're going with two big second rows and not having Cameron Waukee in the starting team, if they're picking a centre on the wing instead of a very fleet-footed, you know, a guy from Bordeaux, like, maybe that indicates that they're not going to go that way.
Delivering the other piece, so, like, I don't think that those two things, like, really focusing on attacking and using your size and your strength and your bulk, I don't think that that means that it doesn't open up opportunities for you to play great rugby either, Will. I think actually, in fact, that, you know, someone like Jalabert will be able to pick those opportunities pretty well. And if they're on top, the opportunities become even more obvious.
That's what Toulouse and La Rochelle do. Like, if you see them in the Champions Cup, like, they're packing steamroll people, and then it gives them license to cut them open out wide. And they've been really, really good to lose, to be fair, this season. Jonathan, I want to ask you a question. I'm kind of recycling one of the ones I used to ask during the World Cup, but kind of changing it slightly. If we're sitting here, say, on like March 19th or 20th, I think is a Tuesday, and Ireland have won the Six Nations, what kind of conversation are we having? Like, what does that kind of campaign look like? What did Ireland get right, do you think, over the course of the next 6 weeks?
I think they will have improved upon their set piece that we saw at the World Cup. I think they will have maintained their ability to boss the breakdown against the even teams that are bigger than they are and teams that are more on paper, could be more physical than they are. I think, to use the quarterback analogy that Luke was edging towards, I think we will be talking about Crowley in the way, Sexton to Crowley in the way that people are talking about Rodgers to Love, because I think that's the kind of transition that you need to have to not take a step backwards. And I think we'll have been talking about two, to be honest, really significant away wins, because we shouldn't overlook the fact that Ireland traditionally do not do well in even years, because they have to go to Twickenham and they have to go to Stade de France. So to win a Six Nations in an even numbered year is going to require at least one, possibly two, really big away performances.
Well, yeah, just to that point, you know, when I gave you those statistics earlier, like, in Six Nations that have taken place after a World Cup, Ireland have only gotten 2 out of 12 wins against France and England. And in the Six Nations that have taken place in France and England, you know, in the middle year between World Cups, they've won 6 out of 12 games. So they, like, they're a lot better midway through a World Cup cycle in the even numbered years than they are at the start. I actually thought you were going to go with Brock Purdy, maybe, as the quarterback, you know, taking the big step forward. But I think Jack Crowley, to be fair, is better, a bit better, a bit, a bit more seasoned than Brock Purdy.
I don't think we can ever call Jack Crowley, has ever been called Mr. Irrelevance, to be fair.
True, but to be fair, Brock Purdy's one win away from the Super Bowl, so we can't not give him that much credit. You know, from your perspective, you know, anything that you want to add to that? Like, if Ireland do go on to win the Six Nations, like, some of the stuff is obvious. Like, but one of the things, you know, we touched on Jack Crowley. Like, if Ireland do win the Six, I don't see Ireland winning the Six Nations without Jack Crowley being really, really good. You know, we ask, can they win it with a Six Nations? I don't think Ireland can win the Six Nations if he's just adequate and has just filled in for Johnny Sexton. I think if they have to go on and win it, he'd likely need to have been, like, quite influential.
I suppose I've been leaning the other way, haven't
I? Like, kind of like a Brock Purdy analogy, almost, actually. Like, you can't just be a game manager or kind of...
I think you can. Okay. See, this is probably where I was differing from you. I was saying that it could be a little bit liberating for the team that, it's, you know, all this risk and all this pressure isn't on Johnny Sexton to deliver the game plan for them. Now, the responsibility should be a bit more shared. Even though we are talking about Crowley, like, really, you know, the leaders need to step up around him and take pressure off him. And hopefully, you know, what that does is it presents options for him throughout the game that are kind of obvious. And I think maybe what a result might look like for him and a really great tournament might look like for him is that we're actually not talking about him being exceptional, that we're talking about him getting, you know, 85% of his kicks, that we're talking about the team having played brilliant, and we're talking about Doris, Van der Fleer, we're talking about, you know, Sheehan really lighting it up, we're talking about, you know, how good was Peter O'Mahony leading this team, how good was Ireland's set piece, they really turned that around and they really, you know, had a brilliant tournament. And I think that's maybe what a good tournament might, we want, like, that's what we might be talking about afterwards. If you're asking me, honestly, I think it's too much probably to ask for him to be the exceptional guy. And I really don't feel like there should be the need for that. I think him actually having an adequate tournament, but doing his basics really, really well, that might be an exceptional tournament. If we're being really honest about what we should be reasonably expecting from this guy, and I think if his mindset is that, he actually might have a brilliant tournament, and he might have one or two moments, you know, within the five games that we say, do you know what, that was a bloody brilliant tournament, and he didn't need to be that guy making all these fancy plays, that he used what was around him really, really well. So that's maybe what I think we might be talking about afterwards in terms of a good tournament. And to coincide with that, the last point, and I just want to emphasise it, it'll be boring for the listeners, but that they get the defence is just a little bit stingier. I think that'll be a real key component for them to getting a result over in England, because in Twickenham and over in Marseille, because I think England will, their game plan has to grow a little bit. I think he was being very, very conservative. They were awful to watch, but they were kind of effective, and they got to something that I think, you know, they felt they were within an absolute whisker of going to the final. Do you know what I mean? But I think that they will have to grow the game plan a little bit more. I think Farrell leaving and not being there might simplify things for them. That's always been a question about whether they should have him at 12. I really never thought that he should have been at 12. And I think that really clarifies things for them. So what I'm saying is I think Ireland's defence would be key to getting those two kind of away wins. And that's what we'd be talking about if it's a great tournament as well, not just how the team attacked and how Crowley plays. So
yeah. Jonathan, like outside of Ireland, France, like what team are you most intrigued to see how they develop? Like Luke touched on England there, Steve Borthwick, you know, they got some results at the World Cup, but the rugby has been very, very poor.
Like, turgid, I think.
Turgid, yeah. Scotland, like, you know, they have a big game this weekend against Wales. If they win that, well, we've said this before, if they win that, things might open up for them. You know, Wales, their squad, I was very taken aback when the squad was announced, just looking through it, kind of the lack of real kind of quality in it, or top quality. And then Italy are coming off, they had a tough World Cup draw, but a very, very, very poor World Cup. So, you know, who out of those teams are you most intrigued to see how they get on?
I am somewhat intrigued to see Italy, just under a different coach. All the talk would be that they're going to play more pragmatic, which isn't going to be great to us, but I think they'd probably taken the Kieran Curley, throw the ball around a little bit too far by the end, you know. So I'm intrigued to see how they go, but really I think it is England, because we know that as much as they had a better World Cup than a lot of us thought they would, we know that for the last couple of years they haven't been as good as they should be. I think watching the Premiership teams in Europe, you can see that they've taken a real step forward. Whether that's because the players are coming through, or whether it's just because things are more concentrated, because obviously they've lost those three teams for financial reasons, I think it is an interesting element to it all. And there's almost a sense for me that this is the start, or the proper start, of Steve Borthwick's England tenure, because this was when he was meant to get the job. You know, he got the job obviously because of Eddie Jones departing earlier than planned. This is when he was really meant to be at the helm, and things went so badly for him that you almost thought that it was going to be difficult for him to recover, even to have this as a launching point, as it were. So I think how they kick on after the encouraging results, if not the encouraging performances of the World Cup, and how we see them evolve, obviously missing Farrell in the same way that we've talked about Ireland missing Sexton, and just even what, like, it's always fascinating to see what team England are going to go with, because they have so many players and there's so many different ways that they can play. Like, I think there's always, and this could be seen as a good thing or a bad thing, there's always a lot more intrigue and mystery about an England team announcement. Like, they're not a settled team. So even to see what team they're going to put out this weekend, like, we know Marcus Smith is now out injured, but to see what direction they're going to go in from, I suppose, the start of the tournament to the end of the tournament, I think it's going to be really interesting as well.
Yeah, the amount of chopping and changing they've done in the kind of the latter period of the Jones era, when he kind of moved away from the Saracens core, and then Steve Borthwick in his first Six Nations as well, like, really unsettled the team, and I think the results suffered because of that. And, you know, their fixtures are good. Like, so they start off with Italy away, then they have Wales at home, then a week off, and then you go into Scotland away, week off, Ireland at home, France away. So you kind of build nicely throughout the tournament. Each week is like a little more difficult than the last. I don't think they're going to win the Six Nations, but if there is quality still in that team, if Borthwick can get it right, you know, ultimately though, I think you're going to run into the fact that, like, we've seen Northampton play some really good rugby, and they seem to have some flair players or good attacking backs. Marcus Smith obviously is injured, but he's one of them.
But I think deep down, Borthwick is just not that kind of coach. I don't think that's the way he wants to play. I don't think that's the style that he'd be comfortable with. So I think they're ultimately going to be kind of clashing with that the whole time he's the coach, that he wants to play a certain style and the fans and the players he probably has at his disposal are more suited to playing a different style. What do you think?
I always think that English psyche should be leaning towards Borthwick style anyway. I always feel like an expansive England team.
Do you think they have the players going with that?
No, they might not have the players that they did, but I think, look, the one benefit, I suppose, of, you know, losing three of those teams, if there is any, is that, you know, some of the other teams got stronger by virtue of that. You see some kind of player transfers in between, and maybe that'll be a good thing for them, because I do think, like, Ireland, a lot of what's been great about Irish rugby for a long time, we've been competitive for a very long time now, probably 10 or 15 years we've been thereabouts. For the most part, I think it's fair to say, I think a lot of that has coincided with how the Irish teams have done in the Cup. And the European Cup. I just feel like that's, you know, it gives you great confidence. You're playing against top players, you're playing against good teams week in, week out. And I feel like that confidence has kind of led to a real period of consistency for this Irish team. So it's interesting. I'll be interested to see, whether that feeds through to this English team, because we have seen some improvements. We have seen some big wins. We have seen, you know, I think some green shoots of certainly interest levels, but definitely some progress in terms of their playing as well. So will that feed through? Like, does it need to be as expansive as it is in club rugby? No, I think a more pragmatic approach can be very effective in international rugby, and it can open up, as I say, few opportunities for you if you're really good at it. And this English pack definitely has, I think, the ability to do that to teams. And I would say, you know, a structured game generally suits the English psyche a little bit better, even if they have some fancy players, you know, who can play that way. I always feel that they're better off introducing them once the game is in the balance or has been won, when they need to open up. So I think the structure will suit them. I think Borthwick suits them. I think they're in a difficult stage. I don't think they look like they have the same talent that they have, you know, you think of the great English teams, but I still think they can be very effective. And as you mentioned, the way the tournament is structured for this team in terms of who they play and when they play them, it can lend itself to quite a good tournament here. They could be sneakily could be in a very good position by the end of this tournament if they play well. And if they can, I do think they do need to be a little bit more expansive, but they can still be pragmatic and be very effective. So they could be dark horses for this thing, Will. So yeah, we wait and see on whether there's progress there.
Yeah, intrigued to see who he starts at half as well. Obviously, Marcus Smith was probably the likely candidate, I would have said. Mm. Now he's injured. You have Finn Smith, who was so good. We gave him his kudos last week for that winning.
Sorry, Jones as well coming in is probably an exciting thing.
Yeah,
Felix Jones coming in, like, can he, you know, it looks like he's looking after the defence, isn't he? Yeah. So, I mean, to my mind, if he can implement some of the pressure that South Africa have been able to achieve on teams, like, that's a great basis for a very strong tournament if he can be defensively stingy like that South African team. So, sorry, that's, I just did want to mention that, because it's been on my mind.
Defence in the Six Nations last year, like, remember, France at Twickenham was a disaster.
Oh, cut them
like,
apart.
I think Ireland scored, what, 3 or 4 tries against them at the Aviva. Yeah. Scotland, you know, remember doing Van der Merwe, like, ran.
And Ireland didn't play well, by the way. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Van der Merwe ran 60 metres.
Yeah, shocking.
You know, handing off Don Brand and stuff, who's, like, kind of cast aside now after that. But, yeah, the defence definitely was one of the things that stood out in the last Six Nations, or something that needed some work on. We might, as we get towards the end, go with their left wing moment of the week in association with Bank of Ireland. Obviously, it was kind of a down week for the Irish teams last weekend, but I still got to watch some rugby. It's always rugby to be watched somewhere. I'm going to go with Finn Russell's ill-advised cross kick against Bristol. It's so funny, like, at a time where he's been made kind of co-captain and, like, the Netflix show is kind of shining a light on himself and Townsend and how they allegedly made the defences. It's just like a moment like that where, yeah, you kick to a winger who's, like, double marked and, like, they pick it off on the 5-metre line and walk the ball in for a try. It just made me laugh. It's like, he gives it and he takes it away in equal measure. Like, he's just that kind of player.
Well, I didn't watch any rugby. I took a nice break, Will. But my moment of the week was definitely Finlay Beelam holding hands with Peter O'Mahony. I enjoyed that. I don't know if you saw that. Looked like the team was in good spirits, having a bit of a laugh away in Portugal.
Brown nosing the captain, it sounds like.
Maybe that too. But yeah, no, just looked like a happy squad. You see some kind of pictures of them away in Portugal. That seems to have been a really good base for this team. And they look happy. And I think that they might pull off an upset in the weekend. I think I'm quietly confident on this Irish team. It's unusual, you know. Usually, I'm a worrier about Ireland, but I think they're in a good place and they've got a really strong bench. And I feel like they'll sneak one over Marseille.
Well, we'll do our full prediction.
That's my moment of the week, because I think they look like in a good place. Excuse me, sorry, I went a little far on my moment.
Jonathan.
Yeah, similar to Luke, I didn't see much rugby over the weekend, unless people want to hear about a Schools Cup last 16 game in Ulster. But From the Netflix documentary, I'm going to go with Neil Barnes referring to his side's highest profile player as Ange Capuzzo or whatever his name is. It was the only part of the whole documentary that I found genuinely laughing at me. So I have to know that.
Yeah, the Netflix documentary is an interesting one. I watched some of it.
I couldn't watch it.
What'd you say?
I can't watch it. It's meant to be awful. Is
it? Yeah, it's not great. Like, I don't know. You obviously know some of the lads in the squad, or like, I don't know how open they were or weren't to the cameras being there. I think Ireland provided some of the least amount of access to any team. You know, I don't know. Were guys just not comfortable with it? You know, or they just didn't.
I didn't talk. I haven't seen it. I've just heard that it was kind of restricted access, and rugby teams generally are very slow to move with like different media. You know, Ireland particularly are very, very cautious about how much they open up to the media. Have always traditionally been that way, and haven't really seen it as a positive conduit to say attract new people in. So yeah, I wasn't surprised to hear that I think Netflix were a little bit disappointed with the access they got. And particularly as well, people don't like see the Finn Russell comment, for example, I think is a really good example of that. He was clearly joking about that Messi comment. You could clearly see that. But that is rugby players' like worst nightmare for something like that. Irish rugby players particularly, for them to say something like that and for it to come out. No, seriously, if you'd be slagged in the team rooms I was in, if you said something like that, you would get the nicknames, like you could just feel them coming a mile off, or anything stupid you did, like you'd be hounded for saying something like that. Now, I think it's a little bit different in England, maybe obviously Scotland as well, but even for that to be misinterpreted. So I just don't feel like they value it enough. And I think it's very different. Like if you're playing an individual sport like tennis, golf, you know, F1 to a certain extent, you know, promoting yourself and being kind of confident in those things, being a bit more open and showing a bit more yourself, is probably easier to do than in those team environments. Rugby is like the ultimate team game, in my opinion, because I always say it, there is a position for every single size of person there. And there's really, in the best dressing rooms I've ever been in with some of the world-class players, there's no real room for ego. Like even if Drico had ever got, like you'd slag him to bits as well. He would have been able to do
all
that.
All different hairstyles.
And he gets absolute abuse for that. But you know what I mean? I think there just was never, to my mind, rugby is not an unbelievable one for behind the scenes. And it's way more controlled than it was. The best one I've ever seen is that Lions documentary in 97. But the other ones since have been crap.
But that wasn't about like individual personalities. It was just about like the access, you know what I mean? And so I take your point about like one guy might not want to be putting himself above the, you know, the rest and saying various things, but the Lions one was just, you know.
I know, but it was a really good, was a brilliant look at it, but it's so much more sanitized now. And like a lot of the crack in kind of a macho change room might not be like for public consumption, you know, like in a way it's a weird dynamic, and people are so much more sensitive about all those things now. Like if John Bentley had the camera and some of the stuff he was looking at in the gym, like that kind of stuff would go down so badly now because everyone can't take a joke, you know what I mean? So I think it's a different kind of culture around those things now. People are really careful because you can get cancelled for anything now. You know?
It does sound like that, though. They are filming a second season at the moment and it hasn't been greenlit officially, but that apparently the teams have given more access than they did.
Oh, well, that's a good thing.
The first season. So I don't know, maybe they saw that maybe it wasn't so bad after all. It would just be good to get a little more because, you know, I watched the episode about Andrew Porter and it was noticeable that like all the training footage they were showing was from the training camp in Portugal before the tournament.
So they obviously let
them in to get the shots there. And then they kind of were using this stock footage because everyone had different haircuts and stuff. Like it was clearly taken like 6 weeks before. But the Andrew Porter documentary episode, to be fair.
But that was great to see. Like I think he's obviously been very open about that and he's exposed himself a little bit. But I think it's been really well received and rightly so by everyone. So that's great to see the support for him on that. And it's great that he was able to support other people who've been in challenging circumstances. But, you know, I suppose the other side of that is like, I think they probably want to see, yes, they want to see the personalities, but they probably want to see more of the little bit of grit and maybe some of the team talks.
You want to see
like, what's Andy Farrell going to say about France this weekend? Like, where are they going to look to attack them? And then look back on that and go, Jesus, like that was really brilliant by the coach. Or, geez, how did he come up with that? And how did the team react to that? And then you actually could play back the tournament and go, wow, like that was amazing. Like, do you know the way you see like Max Verstappen kind of going back and forth with the team and they're working on the car, all those kind of things, and where they're going to find an edge. Those things were always really interesting. So there is loads of that in rugby too.
Because obviously from an Irish perspective, like Ireland won the Grand Slam. So there was an expectation that it would be kind of this great inside look of Ireland on their Grand Slam journey. In the last episode, apparently, they barely feature because obviously Scotland and Italy gave the most access. So they focused more on that game on the last day than Ireland beating England. And you would have loved like a behind-the-scenes look at Ireland winning the Grand Slam, but unfortunately that wasn't the case. Okay, just before you finish up, it's time
for our favourite part, predictions. Jonathan, I'll go to you first. You know, who'll win the Six Nations? Who'll win on Friday? You know, throw in anything else, player of the tournament, whatever, wooden spoon, you got the whole lot of it.
I think France will win the tournament. I think France will win on Friday. I don't necessarily think that the tournament is over for the team that doesn't win on Friday, which is what I've sort of thought the last 2 years. I do think there is a potential for one of these two teams to slip up elsewhere, which I didn't think the last 2 years. I'm going to go star of the tournament. I'll go Damien Penaud, which I know is not a particularly original answer. And for an even less original answer, I'll say Italy for the wooden spoon.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said there. I think France will win on Friday night. I just think them and Marseille, I think the atmosphere will be massive, like Ronan O'Gara was mentioning earlier, how passionate those fans are down there. It's like a different crowd to the Stade de France, which is a tricky enough place as it is. So I expect France to win on Friday. But I agree with you. Wouldn't shock me if like France did slip up. But, you know, away to Scotland, a kind of a Saturday 2 o'clock kind of random kickoff time isn't the easiest game. And then Ireland would have to go on and win in Twickenham, which would be tricky. So yeah, I think France win the Six Nations. I think Italy get the wooden spoon. Player of the tournament, I won't copy your Damien Penaud one, even though I was going to. I'll go with Thomas Ramos. He's just playing like lights out rugby at the moment. He's just playing so well. So I'm going to go with Thomas Ramos. Luke, you can finish.
Just for a bit of crack. I don't really disagree with anything there, but just for a bit of fun, I'll put my neck out there. I think Ireland win on Friday. I think Ireland win the tournament. I think Dan Sheehan gets player of the tournament. Or Doris maybe. No, Sheehan. I'm going to stick with Sheehan. And wooden spoon, definitely Italy. Although Wales might push them. And was there anything else? Player of the tournament, wasn't it? Did I give player of the tournament? I did. Sorry, I'm all done, am I? I'm through all. Yeah, nothing else I could think of. But yeah, I think, I'm a little bit bullish on Ireland. I think they might have a great tournament. Yeah, I think settled coaching staff, settled way of playing, missing a key guy, but I think they rebound well and get a few of those key issues sorted, because they pretty much, I couldn't believe, I thought they were going to win that World Cup. I thought they should have, to be honest. So I know, but I think they're the best team in the world, so I think they should win it. Yeah,
like Andy Farrell, I'm finally over it. I can finally move on. And what a game to start us off with on Friday night, France versus Ireland. But for the moment, that's all we have time for on the Left Wing Podcast. I'd like to thank Luke and Jonathan for joining me, and of course Ronan O'Gara earlier. We will be back tomorrow with another podcast after the Ireland team announcement. Until then, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.